I'm very pleased to welcome back to Viv in the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum. Welcome back for another week on The View, Martin.
Thank you, Michael, and looking forward to the conversation.
Once upon a time, we were introduced to the expression global citizens, and certainly these days, many of us think we are, and you and I have the job each week of looking what's going on around the globe. But starting selfishly, much closer to home, the Albanese Labor government, the Prime Minister announced that indeed they would be changing the superannuation tax laws so that less than a million people, or in fact a few hundred thousand people, aren't as privileged as they currently are. What's the super law business all about? What's the politics of it?
Well, I can speak to the politics of it because I'm no super expert itself. But the politics of this is that obviously the government's in a bit of a bind with its budget. It needs to find revenue and it's looking around for the best options. Obviously, super is generally taxed at a much lower rate than general income. And there's been a number of ways in which people shovel all sorts of different things into their super packages. And the government wants to close some of the loopholes, and this is going to affect particularly for people that have over $3 million in their super. And I think it's around 80,000 Australians that they say is going to be affected. Now, that sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot in 26 million. And it's probably certainly the upper echelon, the more wealthy people that are affected. However, the politics of this is that because super is unbelievably complex and most of us don't really understand how it works, it feeds into perceptions that everyone will be affected. And I think so you're getting your talkback radio and other things like that, don't touch my super. And probably many of those people will have no discernible impact on the super, but they probably think they will. So that's some of the complexities. It's a bit like the franking credits thing, which only affected a small number of people, but people thought it was a retirement tax. So if this is pitched as a general super tax by the opposition, they're going to get a fair bit of traction around it because of the complexity of the policy area.
I guess by announcing that they are going to make the changes, legislating for them, even though they don't take effect till after the next general election, Labor's trying their best to make it a non election issue next time round.
Yeah, well, I think often in the first major budget is when you get a bit more of the pain after an election. Of course, the problem of always is opposition parties and parties of government too often rule out ahead of elections touching any sorts of things, in particular revenue raising, because they don't want to offend too many people. So the government said they weren't touching super and now they're doing this. So I think that part of the narrative will be around breaking election promises.
Well, going from, in a sense, the super wealthy to the folk really who don't have much and rely on Social Security and who were badly affected in many instances by the robo-debt period in the Commonwealth government departments involved, there's a commission of inquiry that's just about at an end. It's been spectacular to watch just how public servants at the highest levels and ministers of government have acted, particularly the leading public servants and lawyers amongst them. What do you predict will come out of all of this, Martin?
Well, yeah, there's been some stunning pieces of evidence given at this robo-debt inquiry. And when you look at policy failures, you get some fabulous material out of an inquiry, but a lot of it's very depressing. This is one of the most extraordinary. So basically, the former cabinet minister, Roberts, who was one of the ministers overseeing this, has admitted that he misled the public on a number of occasions because he was a cabinet minister and is obliged to toe the government line. And this was astonishing. So cabinet solidarity is about agreeing to something even if you don't agree to it. So maybe there's a slight dishonesty there, but it's not about lying about the policy. It's not about misleading the public about the policy. So, yeah, this was a fairly stunning admission. And if he'd admitted that when he was a minister, I think that'd be absolutely huge cause for him to lose his job. So it just reminds us the conduct of some of the ministers at the time around this policy issue was shocking. And they certainly weren't levelling Australian people.
Yes, the Westminster slogans, including cabinet solidarity, suddenly become important to people. But it's a bit hard to understand what it's got to do with cabinet solidarity, as you say. Well, sticking with what's going on in the Commonwealth, something that's a little unedifying, it probably is an indicator of how much stress all staffers working for MPs are under, but we have the spectacle of Sally Rugg, a staffer for Monique Ryan, one of the newly elected Teals, taking action against her in the courts. They haven't been able to resolve their differences, so presumably the washing's all going to be hung out to dry and we'll get to see what it looks like. What do you reckon? I suppose it's generally not a good look, but a bit like Robodebt, it might be revealing.
It will be very revealing if it goes to court, which is looking increasingly like it will, because you'll get testifying from both ends about what's fairly very much the internal working of electorate offices within Australian federal MPs. There's everyone knows that some Australian federal MPs and their offices are very, very busy, and some staffers work extremely long hours. But trying to unpack this and how much of that is, you know, the MP and the advisors are deciding to work those hours and how much of it is absolutely essential, it's actually really difficult to unpack. So that will be really interesting. And I think a lot of people say this is a bit of a test case for this area, I think. Because when you talk about an MP's activity, there's actually not a, there's a lot less than an MP strictly has to do, but then there's a lot that an MP should do if they want to be really effective in their community and make a difference. So where does that all fit when it comes to staffers and the hours they work?
When are you allowed to turn your mobile phone off?
That's right. It's not a, those roles are not strict 9-to-5 roles. So this will be an interesting case.
Well, that's a case in a sense of the overheated political electorate office. In Western Australia, we've been looking at the overheated state housing industry. The well-known large construction house building company BGC, once part of the famous Len Buckridge's empire, has just suspended taking new contracts. Everyone's trying to catch up with the old. There are complaints about the supply line not enabling them to do things. They're also complaining seriously about a lack of resources, human resources, to get these houses built. You sort of wonder whether this wasn't all predictable and perhaps some of the economic relief packages were rushed into too quickly around the country. What do you reckon?
Well, there's no doubt the main cause for the problem is a lack of skilled labour, and I think everyone agrees that that's what's driving this. I guess what's in contention and where the government's facing some flak is to what extent did their $20,000 home buyer grant overstimulate this area and probably drive too much demand when there was insufficient supply. That's harder to understand. You need to understand other factors that are also at play here. But this is one of a number of areas, probably one of the most acute, where labour shortages are really starting to bite. And because it's housing and has a really big impact, because we've got a lot of people desperately needing to find a spot to live.
Well, a lot of things were being stimulated at that time. No doubt we'll get to see more of that. Turning internationally, we've seen a couple of sort of unhappy things happening, some things from the past. We've had a big train crash in Greece. Martin, it's absolutely terrible. It's best not to watch the videos and look at the photographs. A lot of students in the main, it seems, have died in a head-on crash. The Minister for the Trains immediately resigned, which sounds like an unusual but proper case for a minister to resign. They've arrested a station master and apparently charged him with manslaughter. If you go to Greece, particularly for the Olympics, a lot of EU money came in. They've got the most magnificent road system. You can shoot out of Athens in most directions and get to where you're going very quickly. But here we learn that the train system is substandard. Does this tell us anything about the way governments work generally? Is there something about Greece? Is it, do you think, likely to be the case around much of that part of Europe?
Yeah, that's a it is a really interesting one. There's in Greece, the road system's generally pretty good. You can get around Greece very well. But they've had problems with their trains, they've had problems with their ferries. And, you know, you look at from an outsider's perspective and being a bit of a cynic, is that have they got all their priorities right? Because some of the other train systems, the inter-country train systems in France and Italy, Germany in particular, are outstanding. So are they catering for the need there very, very effectively? One thing you don't want when you're heavily reliant on tourism, and Greece has struggled a bit economically, and tourism is the one thing that keeps it going, is you don't want a poor train or ferry system, because people will regard that as a hazard and they'll think it's unsafe to visit and the numbers will drop off. And that would be the biggest danger for Greece. Obviously, though, it's a massive tragedy for all concerned. But that's the longer-term economic implication if they can't fix this.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. In Athens itself, the metro underground system, which goes up above ground pretty quickly in many places, is quite superb. And they don't have many places to run longer trains, but from Athens to Thessaloniki is one of them, and that's where this accident took place. There's still a continuing debate. I'm not sure why or why, how helpful it is and whether it'll ever be satisfactorily resolved, Martin, but people keep talking about Wuhan and COVID and where the virus came from. Was it out of an animal market? Did it leak from a laboratory? And then we read at different accounts of it, and people are doing podcasts about it and writing books about it. They use low level of confidence as a way of expressing the strength of their conclusions. Why is it going on and on? I guess it's bound to.
On one level, I think it would be absolutely essential and very, very helpful to know exactly how that virus got out, because, I mean, it had a disastrous impact. How many millions of people have died, and the economic impact has been awful, and it was devastating in countries all over the world. So if you can find out what the cause of something like that is and work to prevent that in the future, that's a really productive strategy. However, the problem, of course, it happened in China, and I don't think the Chinese government are at all keen to cooperate and assist here. So what we end up, I think, was just pure conjecture a lot of the time. People have different snippets of circumstantial evidence that they bring to bear. Everyone has a view. Sometimes it might parlay almost into conspiracy theorists as well, in terms of how it happened, and you know, it was a deliberate leak, was an accidental leak, did it come from bats, etc. The only thing that's probably the new development this week was that we had a sort of greater expressions of confidence, perhaps, from US intelligence that it might have come from a Chinese lab. Of course, you know, you've got to put that into a geopolitical context. US and China are fierce rivals. Sometimes these things can be used politically as a weapon to cover up for other things. But, I mean, it would have been great to have a proper inquiry that was fully cooperated with, that was independent, that was separate away from all this geopolitical context. But I don't think we're going to get one.
Well, perhaps not in our lifetimes, but I suspect somewhere along the line China will tell us all exactly what happened, and perhaps it'll be not at all dramatic. Well, things do come out much after the event. 2017, Martin, there was a terrible terrorist attack on the Manchester Arena. There was a big concert, lots of young people, a busy English city, but and this all happened in a well-known entertainment area. MI5 have had the finger pointed at them. People said, were you looking out for terrorists? Were you keeping an eye on the safety of our citizens? And there's a report just to hand that suggests they could have done more. Have you had a quick look at what's coming out there? Are there lessons for spy agencies, internal spy agencies, here, there, and everywhere?
Well, I did find it really fascinating. Of course, four or five or 6 years on from these attacks, the memory can dim. But this was awful. This was it was mostly young children that were killed, and at a concert, and it was, you know, the scenes of carnage were just, dreadful. It was during that Islamic State context, you know, where, you know, you had extremists that felt that they were contributing to the caliphate or whatever else behind it. And the thing about, though, that was interesting here is the finger was firmly pointed at MI5 operatives, that there were several flags they could have picked up and they didn't. And you don't often get as much insight into intelligence agencies. Transparency is not a strong suit. We often don't know what's going on. This is somewhat after the fact, but it should be a wake-up call, because we have ever stronger legislation and other compliance that other organisations have to do to, in the interest of national security, but perhaps some of our operatives have not been as effective as they should have been. And they didn't go into specific details, but it seemed that there were several suspicious things happening about the two Abedi brothers that could have been picked up and should have been picked up but weren't picked up before they committed that attack.
It is interesting, isn't it? One's, in a sense, rightly suspicious as a free-living citizen in giving too much power to the ASIOs and external spy functionaries in your country. But when you want them to work, you want them to work. So I guess people will look down and look at whether they really should have worked harder. No doubt there'll be a lot of internal seminars in MI5, maybe a few heads roll. But Martin, to draw things today, there's a really important question that I have to put to you. And this is preceded by a very good scratch match victory at Fremantle Oval last night, where the Fremantle Dockers, I should be moderate in my language, they probably didn't tail up Port Adelaide. They did kick the last four goals, I think, though. Where do you think they'll finish? Top four this year?
I'm not as bullish about their prospects. I'm thinking finals again, but probably somewhere from 5 to 8, Michael. I think there's hope for all the Dockers fans out there, but probably not as optimistic about their chances as, say, top four. But, you know, they'll be right in the mix. There's quite a few teams that will be vying for that top four position.
All right. Well, on that, semi-optimistic.
What about yourself, Michael? Right?
They had a brilliant season last season. Our footy scribe on Fremantle Shipping News, Gero Robertson, was really taken with them. Not sure whether Gero's writing for us this year, but we'll keep an eye out on the Shipping News for who could be our new scribe in footy. Look, I think they'll finish fifth.
We're in the same ballpark then. You have to finish fifth or sixth to get a home final.
All right, and you and I will get a special award. Martin, great talking to you. See you next week.
Great talking to you, Michael. Much really appreciate it.